Off the Ball
Rugby.
There is no price, there's no World Cup, there's nothing that can replace your health. There's nothing bigger in the game of rugby than keeping your players safe.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football journalist and broadcaster John Bruin. John, good morning.
Hello there, how are you?
Very well, thank you. In terms of excitement levels, like, it's easy to forget, say, what you felt this time last year, John, or the year before, But such is the transfer activity and the amount of movement and I guess the unpredictability of this season. There is a level of excitement I'm feeling that seems different to recent years. I don't know about yourself.
Yeah. I'm actually thinking back to this time last season. If we talk about Liverpool, who obviously playing this evening, Liverpool had a new manager, which obviously was a huge change. But this season, they're getting a new team. That's the big change, isn't it? Honestly, like, obviously, inherited Jurgen Klopp's team, apart from Chiesa. He essentially did not have anyone to add to that squad. Won the title. Won the title playing a different style, you'd say, than Jurgen Klopp. A bit more... they were taking their time over it. They were not particularly as rushed as the heavy metal football. They, let's say Liverpool were not the most exciting champions.
No.
But now... they have signed a group of players that makes me think they're going to be very exciting. And we saw last week at Wembley that there may well be a vulnerability there. But within Liverpool, within Arne Slot, you've got to trust a guy who is such a good coach. And he's going to find a solution to that. But there is that point, wasn't it? We saw it at Wembley last week that, you know, Wirtz, Salah, Ekitike, were almost needed their own ball at one point, you know. and Wirtz in particular. Wirtz, I was at Wembley and he looked magnificent. But there's certain players that are fantastic, but he was something of a... I'm not saying he's a luxury player. He's not a luxury player. He's a top-level player. But it may take a bit of time for the players around him to fit in. Having said that, by the end of tonight, we might be saying Florian Wirtz nailed on for Footballer of the Year as he destroys Bournemouth. That's how it goes, doesn't it?
Are you thinking Juan Sebastian Varane there? Is that similar? Because Varane's first month at United was great. He scored a half-body against Everton and Old Trafford.
Yeah, I was at quite a lot of those games. I remember him coming on against Fulham first game of the season, and I'm a Manchester United fan that's out there, turning to my mate and just thinking, wow, you know,
we've been... we're sorted.
We're sorted, yeah. And you know, that was that Manchester United team. You know, it was absolutely brilliant. They had Roy Keane and Paul Scholes in midfield, and we just thought, wow, we're going to be even better. It didn't work out that way. It really didn't. And by the time he's making mistakes in the Manchester Derby and there was a game against Middlesbrough, you know, Varane was this hated figure. Do you remember he gave this interview where he described walking around the streets of Manchester in the rain, so feeling sorry for himself and at the end of his own tether. And, you know, Varane was never quite the same, was he, once he'd been at Manchester United?
No.
What a player as well.
Yeah, I think he's aged very well. Like, he's a fine wine, isn't he? People appreciate they didn't have the palate for him at that time.
Can it sometimes, John, as well, you mentioned the Chiesa, you know, that was, as you said pretty much the only signing before they won the league under Arne Slot last season. And, like, look, we're, you know, in glowing terms speaking about the Liverpool signings, and rightfully so, there's some unbelievable players that have come in there. And obviously, if they bring in Isak and, say, Mark Gay as well, for a lot of people, you can say, well, just give them the title now. But can there be too many signings? Because obviously the lack of signings worked last year, for example.
Yeah, I mean, you've got two ways of looking at it. It's like, if you have... I mean, the orthodoxy used to be like a settled side is a happier side, didn't it? And maybe football's moved on a little bit more with, you know, the energy levels, I suppose, just needed. And, you know, you think back when teams won the title using 13 players and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's not possible now, is it? And it's... Yeah, it's interesting. I'm thinking of like massive spends over a summer where you just think this lot have got it nailed. Let's go back to, say, Chelsea adding Shevchenko in summer of 2006. Again, I think Shevchenko scored a goal in the Community Shield.
It was unbelievable against Liverpool, and he looked unreal.
You just thought, that's it, they're done. Right, we may as well give up on the title. Manchester United won the title that season and won it well. And you just never know. And this is the thing, isn't it? We spend all summer fantasizing over what a player is going to look like in the team. It just sometimes doesn't quite work out like that. And, you know, by the time you get into November, December, these players, you know, aren't a novelty anymore. It's about churning. It's about turning up every week. It's about putting in consistent performances. But at this moment, we can fantasise, can't we?
We can. I think this week for football broadcasting, the world and the industry is like, it's the battle of the ego. It's like, who's going to be right in 10 months' time? And you're trying to think of like a kind of a beautiful mind scenario with the child, where it's like, I actually have a formula that I'm going to explain why this is going to work and why it won't. And that brings me to the club we were actually talking with you about, John, before we did this slot, was Newcastle United. So we've kind of gone around a bit, you know, we've done Liverpool and Everton together, the Manchester clubs together. We did a bit of London earlier this week with Andrew Mangan. We've done Aston Villa. But Newcastle are such an interesting case because it looks like nobody wants to go to them outside Anthony Elanga. And then suddenly they get Aaron Ramsdale, Malik Tau from Milan, and it looks like Jacob Ramsey's going. And then suddenly it's like, okay, it's actually kind of tasty enough at Newcastle. But there, something at the same time kind of feels a little off with Eddie Howe and what's happening there.
Yeah. You should add maybe Johan Wisser, Brentford. He won't be playing for Keith Andrews over the weekend because they think he's unsettled. And where do we think he's going to go? Well, Newcastle are the only ones there. Those actually look like quite a few decent signings, don't they?
Suddenly, you know, yeah.
And you think, I mean, Jacob Ramsey, beloved at Aston Villa amongst their fans, obviously local lad. They'll miss him. But of course, they're operating in this PSR thing where you get more for a homegrown player. And actually, we do hear that they might not even be able to spend that money. But Newcastle, yes. Eddie Howe. There has been this sense that they've looked at a lot of players, three of whom joined Manchester United, and Mbeumo, who have we got? Mbeumo,
Cesco,
and Cunha.
I
mean, United snapped that one up pretty quickly, but Newcastle were interested. And we're in this era, aren't we, of sporting directors and front offices running the game, and it appears at Newcastle that hasn't been in operation. Paul Mitchell was the guy that went up there, the Mancunian guy that was at Monaco for a while. He did not hit it off with Eddie Howe, that's fair to say. He found it difficult to deal with the structure because, of course, it's owned by Saudi Arabia. There's an awful lot of, I think, paperwork and emails and getting a say-so of someone, you know, halfway around the world. That he found that difficult. At the heart of the ESAC issue is said to be that Amanda Staveley, the former director and co-owner of the club, she had promised Isak this deal, this extension of a contract. Paul Mitchell's thought, well, he's got so many years left on the contract, didn't sign this deal, and this is at the heart of Isak's dissatisfaction with being at Newcastle. The fact that other elite clubs might want to sign him, I'm sure, has nothing to do with it. He just feels sullied. and then you have this issue where Eddie Howe is having to run the club himself. You know, be the head of... almost having to do the sporting director role himself, which is not the way it used to be. You don't become Alex Ferguson or Arsene Wenger anymore. And there's this idea... There's him and his recruiting team, which includes his nephew. I found it very difficult to get people over the line. There have been a few meetings with players who've gone elsewhere. Yeah. And I think at that point, the club started to lose heart in the fact that they couldn't attract players. But as the market's gone on, and, you know, if they do sell Isak in the next couple of weeks, they're going to have a lot of money to spend on players. The Newcastle supporters will tell you that it's PSR that is the big issue, and that the Red Cartel have stopped them being able to spend all this money. My view tends to be that it's this organisation behind the scenes. It's not like Manchester City got things right with the setup they got to supply Pep with, you know, the best team in the Premier League, or the way that Roman Abramovich was able to, you know, just furnish his managers and his sporting directors with who he wanted. They haven't done that because it's disorganised behind the scenes. One of the issues, of course, with Saudi Arabia is they've got other interests. They're trying to buy everything. Mm. You know, we've just had the Club World Cup. Essentially, it was a Club World Cup run and owned by Saudi Arabia. You know, their image is global. What they're looking for is global. And unfortunately, Newcastle becomes something of a local concern.
They have the worst of both worlds, Newcastle, because they have no respect because they're owned by Saudis, but they don't get the Saudi money.
Yeah, listen, I have a bit of sympathy for the Newcastle fans that were excited, that they thought things would be different, that they thought at last their team, who, you know, I don't know if you know Newcastle, but it's the very heart of the city, their club that they feel deserves its point, you know, in the top echelon, was finally going to get there. But they say that the rules were changed. Now, I would argue that the rules were changed for the right reason. You can't have state-owned clubs. I don't think it's a particularly positive step. And you can't have people just spending money willy-nilly because it causes problems in the football economy, lower down the economy. We look at Morecambe. We look at Sheffield Wednesday. As costs go up, it becomes harder for the smaller clubs to be able to run themselves. So it has that knock-on effect. You've got to look at football as a whole. But football fans don't do that, do they? They look at what's in it for their club. And I understand that completely. I'm a football fan myself. But it is possibly a little bit embarrassing for Newcastle fans when you've been, you know, praising Saudi Arabia and praising all the great stuff they've been doing for Newcastle as a city. And then they don't deliver what you wanted most of all, which is deliver you a good team. Having said that, this is a team that's going to play Champions League football. It won a trophy last season. They've got a good manager in Eddie Howe. Things have been a lot worse at Newcastle.
Yeah, those are the positives. And they're such an interesting case study. And yet, you look, you mentioned the players that they were linked with who decided to go elsewhere. And you can add on João Pedro and Ekitike, sure, and James Trafford to that list as well, who were all at one point linked. And all these players decided to go to Liverpool or Manchester or London. You don't read too much into pre-season, but they haven't won a pre-season fixture, Newcastle. As you said, there'd be the distraction of the Champions League as well, which you could look at the negative side of that this season. John, if you look at their last five seasons, so they finished 12th, 11th, and then 4th, 7th, 5th. So really, should they be pushing on from, obviously top four is the target at this stage, top five, whatever gets Champions League. But anything other than that is pure stagnation at this point, presumably, from Newcastle.
I'm not sure it's stagnation. If they finished fourth again, that would be, a real achievement.
Well, yeah, sorry, but anything say below Champions League.
Yeah, sure. So you're suggesting that the Champions League is a problem, it stretches a small squad and then they drop down out of those places. Yeah. To not return to the Champions League, of course, would be a stagnation. It would be... You know, from my point of view, seasons come around so fast that you're sort of lost in this idea that everything's got to be progress and growth and all this. Maybe Newcastle fans should be happy with at last they have a team that is going places, won a trophy in a Champions League, that winning the title. I mean, it took Manchester City, didn't it, when they won the title for the first time. It took them 4 years. That's the stage we're at with Newcastle. But the landscape's changed since then. You know, you also have, at this point, there's no Manchester United around. They still come in and buy the players you want, but as a threat, you would say. But you have Liverpool and Manchester City, these very established clubs. You've got Arsenal, again, who have established themselves up the way. It's difficult to get through, to pierce that group, isn't it? I mean, and Chelsea, you know, whatever Chelsea are doing, Newcastle fans might look at that with PSR and stuff like that and think it's difficult to compete. If Newcastle are fighting alongside those clubs and performing as well as they did last season, I think they should be very happy, and they were happy. But it appears this summer of expectation, and this is it again about the fantasy thing, you know, a player wants to leave, some players don't want to come, and then a club is sent off its axis to become this crisis club and everything is terrible. Maybe what they actually need is to play some football and enjoy it and win games, and then it's like, oh God, you know, it's football, it's what you're there for. But it's so funny, isn't it, the shadow that a transfer window can cast over playing football.
There are so many people who, I think, love transfers more than the game itself. It's kind of slightly more, you get that adrenaline hit. A lot of love coming in for John Bruin in the YouTube comments this morning. Keep it coming. Can I talk to you about the obsession with trophies, okay?
Yeah.
And a club winning a trophy. And so it's labelled against Mikel Arteta, of course, because outside of the FA Cup in 2020, when he was 6 months into the job, he hasn't won anything, of course, but he's been so consistent. Then you look at a club like Newcastle, who win the League Cup, their first trophy in eons, and then Spurs, who win the Europa League, their first trophy in quite a while. And we all just move on. So there's like this obsession with it, like that you have to win a trophy, have to win a trophy, and that's going to change everything. But now we're here talking about the turmoil that Newcastle have faced this summer. And I know Spurs changed manager, but there's still a feeling of like, oh geez, I don't know how good Spurs are going to be this season. And it's just interesting. I think it's a false dawn for a lot of fans, the winning of a trophy.
Well, yeah, it's Crystal Palace as well, of course, you know.
Absolutely.
Won the FA Cup, first trophy that they've ever won. The most golden day in their lifetimes. You know, within a week, there's a legal case over them being in a European competition. They win a Community Shield. You know, they, again, they've never won the next day.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
They dropped out. It's grim, isn't it? You know, and yeah, we're all brought up like the trophy. And speak to players, speak to managers. They want to win trophies, don't they? But we're in a different era, I suppose, where owners, say the owners of Arsenal in particular, if Arsenal are in the top three playing Champions League football, the money's coming in, they're happy. I think at the moment, maybe Arsenal's focus has shifted towards the point where they're thinking, maybe we should start winning trophies now. And I think that's particularly true among the fans. And I think, as you make a good point about Arteta, I think Arsenal can win the title this season. I really do. I think they're so well equipped in every department. We'll have to see how Gyökeres goes, but they've still got a second talent, even if he doesn't fire. But it's Arteta is the guy that the pressure is on, and we'll have to see how well he wears the pressure. He's a mini Pep, isn't he, in many ways? And we've seen how the pressure gets to Pep, even when he is producing a team that is playing football beyond all others. Arteta has that same, you know, if you ever go to a game and you stood behind, Brighton is a good place to go where you end up sat behind a manager. I've once sat watching Arteta, the agonies he went through as his team won 4-1. It was incredible. So the pressure it really puts on himself at press conferences, he's an intense character. We've seen through the various documentaries and, you know, lifting of the lid, the various tricks he's playing to affect the mindset of the players, because what you don't want in a dressing room is the stale mindset of, oh, right, here we go, another season, you know, let's clock this one off.
He seems to be enjoying himself doing that, Jan, Mikel Arteta, and going through the agony like you just described and ended up winning handsomely, and it looks like he's miserable, but the joy is in the misery for Mikel.
Yeah, definitely. He likes that, doesn't he? The hard work ethic of it. Eddie Howe's not dissimilar, actually. That sort of character of, like, you know, we're in this era, aren't we, of these high performance, your LinkedIn-y stuff. You know, it's that, and showing the intensity of just how bloody hard you're working on, you know, to get these results. You know, and actually you think back to you know, managers of the past, someone like Bob Paisley, when he won a game, he had a huge smile. Brian Clough, huge smile when he won the game. You know, it's a slightly different thing. The pressures are the same. That, you know, they were people who had to manage an entire football club. But it's there is a seriousness about it, isn't there? You know, for those top managers. Like Thomas Frank has just come in at Tottenham, a manager I've spent quite a lot of time hearing from at Brentford. He's a guy that can maybe see the less serious side of things, and, you know, and is able to see it for what it is. You know, it's football. But you do wonder about being at a club like Spurs, that he might end up... Like, I mean, do you remember dear old Ange Postecoglou, the entertainer that arrived at English football? He was a great laugh. Yeah. By the end, you've never met a more miserable...
Well, Arne Slot seems to love life.
Yeah. Arne Slot from Rosa, I know that at the club, you know, he's a pretty sunny personality. He can switch on and off from it. It was interesting to see... Arne Slot had a dream last season, really, didn't he? I suppose Liverpool did, and by the end of the season, were looking a bit careworn, weren't they? Which is probably why they needed to go out and spend a lot of money and revamp the team. I'm told from people back over in Holland that there is an ego there. is quite keen on his own opinions being held, and criticism is not something that he deals with as well as you might expect. Jürgen Klopp was the same. We'll have to see that. I think there may be a point in the season. Yeah, that's it. We haven't seen Slot under real pressure yet because he did such a good job. No, it's very possible we might not see that this season. Does the players for that to happen? But Slot under pressure, that's going to be interesting, because I remember there's a quote from Harry Redknapp talking about Arsene Wenger many years ago. You know, Wenger arrived, this guy that changed English football, this professor, who and he says, after a few seasons, he turned and he watched Wenger going mental on the sidelines and just thought, you're just as mad as the rest of us at the end of it, aren't you?
Changes people, in fairness. Can I just ask you, John, I'm curious to know how many teams you think are actually capable of winning the Premier League this season. I was reading during the week some people were saying, top four definitely can win the league. Last month, around a pre-season game, Mikel Arteta, who we're talking about there, said he believes up to 9 teams could win the Premier League. I kind of said it tongue-in-cheek. The exact quote, and I have it in front of me, he basically said, the thing is, there are another 6, 7, 8 clubs in the league that have the right ingredients to win, and there's only going to be one winner. Maybe it's a stretch, but how many teams do you think can win the Premier League or are capable of it this season?
Okay, well, Arsenal won, as I've said. Yeah, they have that capability. They've got the strength in depth. They probably need to be a bit calmer about it than they were last season. Remember, there was the Declan Rice sending off, and it felt like I was getting Brighton, and it felt like everything came off.
They that was need early to, as well. It was early in the season.
But it felt like they were over at that point, didn't it? They need to chill out a bit, Liverpool, obviously. Manchester City are almost the wild card. We're saying that about Manchester City because we don't recognise quite a few of the players. We don't know how Pep is going to respond to how things went last season. That spell over autumn and winter when the wheels came off. They came back to us in last season. They finished third. They were playing much better football. But in the FA Cup final, they were not well beaten, but they were beaten by Palace, and it wasn't a shock. In the Club World Cup, should you attach any importance to this thing, they look good, and then they lose to a Saudi Arabian team, and then it all goes wrong. It's going to be difficult for Pep. He always takes quite a bit of time to bed in players. He's got to bed in quite a few players at one time, so we'll have to see about them. And then Chelsea, the world champions. They've got enough players. I just wonder about the manager, actually. Whether his style is a little bit too prescriptive, a bit, if you hear from Maresca after a game or before a game, it does appear a bit... the Italian education system, I think it's done by rote, isn't it? And I think that's how he manages, which is the Italian way. But it's interesting for someone who, played for West Brom, has played in Spain... He is a very, very Italian way of thinking, this way of just everything is measured out and, you've got to be in this position. And considering the amount of maverick talent that Chelsea have got, all those wingers, Cole Palmer, of course, they don't really turn on the style very often, do they? They're lacking a bit of, a bit of swagger. And if he's able to inject that, and get the bridge on his side, because I'm not sure that many fans were that keen on Maresca, perhaps they're keen on him after winning a couple of trophies, then Chelsea could have got a shot. Beyond that, I'm struggling. I know about Manchester United, I'll say you that.
Well, on Manchester United, who do you think will adapt better in their debut Premier League campaign, Victor Gyökeres or Benjamin Sesko?
Well, we're going to find out on Sunday, aren't we? as a first indicator. I watched a bit of Gyökeres against Villarreal, was it? I think he struggled a little bit with the pace of it. Then I think he was better in the game after that. Sesko is the great... there's an enigma there, isn't there? Because he has been talked about by Arsenal, actually, for quite a while. We've been expecting to see this player. And then everyone wanted him. And then when he signs up, ends up at Manchester United, there's this talk that, he wasn't the player that we wanted at Arsenal or Newcastle. Actually, he's not really what we wanted. And United get him, and everyone's saying, my colleague and friend Jonathan Wilson was saying he's not great one-on-one and all that. But you score a goal, for me, the player, you score a goal for Arsenal against Manchester United, vice versa, you're on your way, aren't you? Mm-hmm. You're on your way. That is still a big game, even though it's sort of, you know, no longer the white heat rivalry of yore. But yeah, get on the mark there. And there's so much expectation. I mean, if you were those two lads now, I don't even be able to sleep for the next couple of days. I mean, it's the big one, isn't it, for both of them? But and Gyökeres, of course, is 27. I mean, I saw him play for Coventry a couple of years ago against Wrexham in the FA Cup. He came on for the last 10 minutes. I remember Wrexham at that point were a like fourth tier team. He was mustard. He was amazing. His ability compared to the other players around him was really, really high. He's gone to Lisbon. He's won two titles with all those goals. He's a player at the peak. Yeah. We just wonder if that peak is top Premier League level.
We actually had the former Coventry City striker and Irish international Sean Maguire on the show a couple of years ago, and we asked him who the best player he played with was, and he said Victor Gyökeres, Coventry. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Johnny was kind of well-known-ish. He was like, you know, it's around the place. But in those couple of years since, he's gone on sky high. John, who's Fufu Lamar and why was he best friends with Alex Ferguson?
Okay. Fufu Lamar was a famous drag artist, which is, it's actually kind of night out in Manchester. And he had a, what was it called? Fufu's Palace or something like that. And I think that's a reference to my, but there was a tweet over the summer, wasn't there? Because Pep was spending time. Pep was at Oasis and was essentially the star of the show at Heaton Park, and videos appearing. We also saw that picture of him with Jack Grealish, you know, in a clinch.
Yeah,
which appears to have been I knew it was you, Fredo. moment, wasn't it? This tweet said, you know, that's the thing that Pep has won over the hearts of Manchester and doesn't involve himself in. Ferguson never did this. Alex Ferguson never did this. Well, Fergie still lives in the area. Fergie is it's a different era. Fergie would be at, you know, dinners at Lancashire Cricket Club and wherever, you know, a civic guy, you know, out on the city. And Pep is a younger person, I suppose, or probably the same age, but in a different era. And Fufu Lamar was, this famous drag artist in Manchester. Great night out down there. And he would be found in the director's box at Man United, where he's friends with all the directors and the managers and the players. Ryan Giggs was a friend of his as well, attended his funeral. Was a big part of the club, you know, one of those people that was a familiar face and beloved of Manchester, you know, one of those local characters.
John Bruin, a massive pleasure to speak to you throughout the season, I'm sure.